Howdy, you found Music Heads presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. Thanks for dropping by. It's a roundtable discussion where a couple of colleagues and I each get together each week and talk about some of the new music we've been playing on the station and find out if, in fact, it's working for us. I'm the host of the show, Bill DeVille. It's my pleasure to welcome guests. Weekender Tony Lopez in the house. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Doing good. Nice to have you back.
Thanks.
And early Saturday morning host Dave Campbell back for another visit.
Round two. Rope-a-dope.
Round two. You ready
Dave.
To go?
Let's do this.
All right. Let's do it. Well, the Akron, Ohio duo The Black Keys featuring Patrick Carney on the drum kit and Dan Auerbach on the guitar and vocals are back with their fifth album, Attack and Release. Like the White Stripes, Auerbach and Carney are known for blending the blues and rock into a sound all their own. One of the other trademarks of the Black Keys is their preference for medium fidelity recording techniques. The band does most of the recording, producing, and mixing themselves. That is, until now. Gnarls Barkley's Danger Mouse was enlisted to produce Attack and Release. With Danger Mouse aboard, their music has been given some room to move. Here's a sample of the song I Got Mine from the Black Keys. New music from the Black Keys. The album is Attack and Release. Tony, is this working for you?
Yeah, in a big way. You can really hear the band expanding their sound. And, you know, maybe that's a result of, you know, after four albums, maybe the duo has figured they need to do something different.
Sure.
You know, I mean, they could have just come out with another heavy-hitting blues hard rock
another
album.
Rubber Factory wouldn't have been bad though,
and
either,
that would have been fine. I could have lived with that, but I suppose if, you know, if you want to grow as an artist, then getting Danger Mouse to record your next record seems like, you know, a courageous step. It seems logical, but Danger Mouse doesn't overdo it either.
No, it's not an overcooked, you know, album. I don't think
not
so
at all, and nothing is overdone, as you said. There's a funkiness that maybe is present that wasn't so obvious on previous Black Keys records. I'm thinking of the song Psychotic Girl, which is track four. There's,
oh, I love the simplicity of that
real
one.
Real funky, and mm-hmm. I think there might be even be a banjo
there's,
in there.
Yeah, banjo, drums, acoustic guitar, and that's pretty much about it.
And then that high, and then the Danger Mouse influence, that sort of high-pitched buzzsaw that it sounds like to me. That song really exemplifies a lot of what's going on in this record.
Dave Campbell, working for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know you're talking about that two-octave shift thing on the guitar. We're going to hear that again on the Raconteurs record, too. That's sort of like a Jack White specialty.
Sure.
And I think, I'm with you guys 100%. I think this is a fantastic record, and it's really smart progress from the original one-dimensionality of the first record.
But there's nothing wrong with that one-dimensional style.
No,
they had
that's
either.
Good, but you got to remember, or, you know, I think it's important for us as listeners to allow the band. You know, they were in their early 20s, and now they're getting older, and you can't do heavy riff rock with, like, caveman drumming for your entire life. I mean, you can, but that's boring. And I think they're growing, they're stealing from the right people, they're partnering with even better people, but they're not wandering away from what they do best, which is, you know, those great riffs. That Dan is a fantastic player, and I think having Mark Ribot on this album, I really love to know the
split.
Yeah,
there's another guest, another ghost in the machine.
Yeah, who did what? But Patrick's simple drumming works really well again on this, and I feel like the groove assessment is an accurate one. I feel like they do play They've had that much more time to play as an ensemble. I feel like they really do swing in the right parts. And there's a really soulful element to a lot of these tunes.
That song I Got Mine, it totally reminds me of, you guys familiar with the Allman Brothers Whippin' Post?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They got that Allman Brothers thing going on there, and that's not a bad deal.
No.
This is really, ultimately, a classic rock album more than it is a blues rock album to me.
And you've seen signs of that. If you look back at Rubber Factory, the Kinks cover, Nice and Gentle, I believe, that sort of mellow swinginess to it, or You're the One on their last record, Magic Potion, or even the spaciness on some of the Chulahoma EP, the Junior Kimbrough EP, which is really a full record in and of itself. It's more than a half hour long. It's like seven tracks or something. You've seen them move in that direction, and it's really cool to see what I attribute to the addition of Danger Mouse, the varied instrumentation on all the tracks. I mean, this thing is not boring in any way. Each song is completely different from the last. I mean, there's enough of the, you know, the big riff rock stuff, I Got Mine and Strange Times and Same Old Thing, ironically titled because it's exactly like everything they've ever
it's
done.
It's the same old thing,
right,
but
right.
That's not a bad thing necessarily either.
There's plenty of that for the fans, and there's some new stuff for people who maybe didn't want. The complaint I always heard on the Black Keys was that they did the same thing over and over for the whole record, and I think this provides the variety that really makes it a classic.
It's the same old thing.
Speaking of same old thing, it's funny you bring that up, Dave, because there's nothing like throwing on the flute to test your fan base.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not only is the band, you know, spreading their wings out a little bit, but also they're testing the loyalty of their fans to see if they're going to go along for the ride. And, you know, I'm not a huge flute fan.
Ah, John Mayall's Blues Breakers, you know, that's what makes me think of John Mayall's Room to Move.
But
you
I
know?
Think that in some cases, the flute does work.
Sure.
And on
Jethro
this song,
Tull.
It does. There's always
that's
the Jethro
always,
Tull.
Yeah, Jeff, that's a bad reference.
Well, I think when you look ahead, you know, let's say we fast forward 10, 15 years, we're going to look back and I think this album is going to be crucial to their development as a band. Attack and Release is going to be the bridge between their earlier stuff and then what they would later accomplish.
Mm-hmm. I think you're probably right. This is Music Heads from 89.3 The Current. The enigmatic singer-songwriter Dan Behar is probably best known as the contributing voices behind the Canadian powerhouse group The New Pornographers. But his solo career actually began a bit earlier. In the mid-90s, he released his first records under the pseudonym Destroyer and quickly developed a following for his highly unusual voice and oblique lyrical style. Some early Destroyer records were lo-fi affairs, some a bit more produced, but always at the center was Behar's impossible-to-ignore presence, influenced by folk, early psychedelic-era Bowie, and sometimes stream-of-consciousness poetic style that comes out almost spoken. In 2006, Destroyer's Rubies gave his fans plenty of his characteristic oddness to chew on while preparing even more new material for both the band Swan Lake, a project with Spencer Krug of Wolf Parade, and the New Pornographers again for their latest CD, Challengers. Finally, we have Trouble in Dreams, Destroyer's eighth release in 12 years and the fourth for the Merge label. The full band sound we've been enjoying from them is back, as are Behar's familiar vocalisms and quirky phrasings. Here's a bit of a track called Dark Leaves from a thread from Destroyer's new CD, Trouble in Dreams.
It's cool, you go, I'll stay perfectly at home with this dread. Dark leaves form a thread. Na 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 na. So, should you still want me? You can find me down at the cafe, a little bit too busy being.
Destroyer, the new album is called Trouble in Dreams. Dave, is it working for you?
No.
No?
No.
Ouch. Well, me neither, Dave.
I like...
Sorry, Tony.
You know, before I bash it. There's no reason that this should not exist in the world. There's Dan has every right to make whatever kind of record he wants.
Let an artist follow his muse.
Let him do his thing. But it just does not work for me. I think his one trick is his lyrical style, the way he writes, what he ends up singing. I don't know what that process is, but what comes out of it and the way he delivers it. It seems like some odd collision between the music, which I'm the instrumental music I'm fond of, and I think there's some great stuff on this record, and it's all over the map too. Once again, it's really an interesting listen from front to back. But Dan, my favorite parts are when Dan's not singing. Yeah. I just can't get
which
in.
Is rare.
Yeah. Well, there's these odd like minute and a half beginning and or intros and outros to songs where there's really beautiful guitar work happening, but it's just his. I understand some people have a limited range. Not everyone can be the greatest singer or have the most charismatic voice, but he does this talk-sing thing that just does nothing for me, and the faux accent really drives it home. That sort of like half-British accent, oh man. But, you know, once again, my favorite parts of the new Pornographer show, the last one where he came out with them, were when he come out on stage, his hair going in all directions, like he just escaped out of the home and a different tall beer in each hand, and he'd, you know, sing some song, and then there's this... you know, the chorus, the new Pornographer's chorus with all these singers, it's really beautiful. But when he's hidden in that, I like it. Or when he takes a verse every now and then, but then him all the time.
I thought that song Myriad Harbor from the last new Pornographer's album was probably
a great song.
Yeah, one of the best songs on the record. Tony, how about you? Is this working for you?
Well, I happen to be
I know you're a fan.
A big Destroyer fan. Yeah. I'm generally speaking, a fan of the unorthodox male voice in rock.
Mountain Goats. I heard the Mountain Goats.
I like John Darnielle a lot. And even going way back, you know, I love Dylan, love Leonard Cohen.
There's a lot of Dylan.
Tom Waits.
In his style,
And then, you know, some of the current batch of singers like, you know, John Darnielle, like we mentioned, Kurt Wagner of Lamb Chop, I think is really great.
But he sings and, speaks. There's a little difference.
Well, but yeah, but I think there, I mean, I think in that talk singing thing there is charisma there, and his lyrics, I mean, he's just so out there and
they're
bizarre.
Really weird, man.
And
foam hands,
you know,
what's he singing about there?
Well, I don't know, but I love that part. That's like,
now the man is high. I mean,
okay,
he makes several references to being high, and I think it's clearly demonstrated in the lyrics, and so you take that, you know, sort of lysergic, you know, tinged, you know, lyricism, and then these like amazing large guitar hooks and Hammond hooks on Leopard of Honor. There is an incredible organ hook.
There's some really great moments in this record, and he's totally I admire him. It doesn't do it for me, but I totally admire what he's after. And I wonder too, it would be great to be a fly on the wall in the studio for the recording of this record, because he's listed as a guitar player as well as Nicholas Bragg, and I wonder who actually did what, because there's some great riffs in here.
There's some good licks, yeah. And I really do believe that lyrically he's, you know, he's very pretentious, but it's so much so that we don't care. He certainly doesn't care. And it's like he's challenging you. Like on Blue Flower, Blue Flame, the opening cut, he says, "A woman by another name is not a woman." I'll tell you what I mean by that. Maybe not in seconds flat. Maybe not today. He's messing with us, you know?
You know what seems odd to me, Tony, is you were not into that Decemberist album at all. And
I had a feeling you were going to bring that up. And
you must have
here's
an
my retort.
Then.
Yeah. because I can't stand Colin Molloy, because I find his style to be a put on, but you know,
well,
Dan Behar is a put on too. Yeah. I'm saying it, but
he's just got a
put
crazy.
On. But I think he's a little bit more authentic, because he'll throw around F bombs like nobody's business,
yeah.
And Colin Molloy won't even go near that. And I think that even though we can't understand a lot of these lyrics, he's talking like we talk. You know, like you talk in everyday life, you know, like...
Oh, it's almost like it's conversations that he had plunked into these great songs.
Maybe at 2 or 3 in the morning after a few, but
What was the one about being seen in the cafe, preoccupied with being served? I thought that was appropriate.
Oh, the sworn enemy of all the waitresses there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think Dan likes to get loose on whatever it is that he likes, and then
he's always on the edge of being thrown out of wherever he's at. Mm-hmm, it seems like too.
Oh yeah, he seemed mildly to pretty seriously uncontrollable at that new pornographer show, and I mean, in that way, I don't think it's a put on at all. I think you're right. I think it's totally authentic. I think there's almost this sort of like childlike pedestrian approach to writing lyrics, but then really complicated, weird content. It's
yeah.
really odd.
It's like this weird modern day romantic poet that's just out of his mind.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
A woman, I tell you what I mean by that. Maybe not in seconds flat, maybe never. A gray ash and sadness rises like the sun. Oh well, it was time I decided to try this hotel.
This is Music Heads from 89.3 The Current. The Raconteurs are back with their second album called Consolers of the Lonely. The group is made up of a few somewhat familiar names. Let's see, there's this fellow named Jack White III. You know, he's going with the third on his handle
nowadays.
Yeah,
what's up with that?
How distinguished.
Yeah, I don't quite know what's up with it. His homie Brendan Benson and Jack Lawrence and Patrick Keeler of the band The Greenhorns. Jack White and Brendan Benson wrote a song for Kix called Steady As She Goes, and that inspired them to create the Raconteurs. The Raconteurs' second album, Consolers of the Lonely, was released a couple of weeks ago. I was at the Electric Fetus and saw it on the shelves and was surprised to see it, as I didn't expect it to be released till midsummer or something. It came
so
out.
So were we.
Yeah.
1 week's notice on that.
Tell
one.
Tell us, how wow. did that work, Dave, quickly?
It's genius. They kept the thing under wraps like nobody ever has before. The album didn't leak, and then with 1 week's notice, they're like listening parties at all across the country. And they drop the record just like that.
Wow.
Vinyl and CDs available.
Yeah,
really
quite,
cool.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
pretty cool. And it didn't leave the critics any time to do any reviews for the album. The album is actually a roller coaster ride or rock and roll. The Raconteurs sounds like friends having fun, playing music inspired by the stuff they grew up with. In a way, that's what being in a band's kind of all about. Much of the album features the dueling vocals of Jack and Brendan. Here's a little bit of the song Salute Your Solution. The Raconteurs' second album is Consolers of the Lonely. Tony, is this working for you?
Yeah, more big hooks. I mean, what's not to like? I will say tad long. Maybe
yeah.
I lost a little bit of interest near the 48-50-minute mark. Whereas the Black Keys was lean and mean, this seems to meander a little bit longer than it should. But I think it starts out really strong. The first two songs... the title track and then the song that we just heard.
I respectfully disagree with you. I think track number one is the weakest track on the album. I think
really?
It was kind of a misstep. Yeah, yeah.
As far as like hooks, though, I mean, it comes out of the gate strong.
Yeah.
But I think the more poppy songs leave me wanting a little bit more. And I don't know if that's a Brendan Benson effect or what, but it seems to have like an immediate lull for me. And then... picks up again a little bit later on with tracks like Five on the Five.
Yep.
And
Rocks
Attention.
Relentlessly that Five on Five.
Five on the Five is great. Attention is my favorite song, you know, as of today. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a pretty good record. I don't think it's nearly as adventurous as the Black Keys. And maybe because I listened to the two records kind of around the same time, you inevitably compare the two to each other. And so I feel like the Black Keys put out much stronger record than the Raconteurs this time around.
Yeah, you know, one thing I want to mention is the first Raconteurs album. I raved about it. You raved about it.
It's a good record.
Yeah.
I thought the record had no legs. I deleted it from my iPod within 6 months and didn't.
Wow.
I haven't listened to it since.
Really?
And the songs were so poppy. But this one, I think is a little bit better of it, quite a bit better of an album. Dave, is this working for you?
I agree with you, Tony. This is a strong record. I don't think it's as big a step artistically for the band. So you kind of find yourself thinking, well, it's just more like, it's more of the same.
Right.
But you know what they do so well.
Yeah.
There's one track, Old Enough, which was
clearly
like a Benson. You can hear the Brendan Benson stuff, the influence on that track. And I'm a Brendan Benson fan, and I have all of his albums, but they're the sort of albums that I would always buy. But about two-thirds of them, I'm just kind of like,
It's so poppy, and Jack is so edgy, and you put them together, and, you know, and
it either works for you or it doesn't. I find that Jack fixes Brendan's lyrical problems and helps him realize the two of them do great things together in the studio, and I think Brendan helps Jack write more really hooky things and experiments more with sound. And that track in particular, there's this great bass line on there, and Jack...
Old Enough?
Brendan takes the lead, and then Jack does the bridge, and they work really well together, I think.
That one reminds me of maybe Fairport Convention or Traffic. Very British sounding.
Huge acoustic guitar solo in the middle of the thing.
Yeah. Who would think that?
Straight up super sounds from the 70s, this album. And as far as lyrical content, Tony, you might have more to add. I honestly just breeze over it. I don't care what they're talking about. It's just about
it doesn't
the
really
buzz
matter, does
riffs,
it? Yeah.
Man.
I disagree with you because of a couple songs. Switch and the Spurs has a spaghetti western feel. And he's telling a story about the West. There's the mariachi horns. But I think lyrically that's pretty interesting. You know, Tale of the Old West. And I think maybe the best song on the album, the final track, Carolina Drama, where Jack White's slow blues number, he's telling a little story about this tattooed 10-year-old boy from South Carolina named Billy, who has a vendetta against his mom's boyfriend, who he kills with a milk bottle.
It was a junk house in South Carolina, held a boy the age of 10, along with his older brother Billy and their mother and her boyfriend, who was a triple loser with some blue tattoos that were given to him when he was young, and a drunk temper that was easy to lose, but thank God he didn't own a gun.
I will say this is just a great band, and you go to see them live, the Greenhorns guys are so good.
Yeah,
they're
rhythm section is just
it's quite an engine room.
Oh my gosh, and the three of them sing and they blend together well. I heard a cover of them doing The Christian Life, which is totally...
Oh, that old Birds, well, was
the Birds? Did it, yeah. Graham, I'm not sure if Graham Parsons...
Graham Parsons of Flying Burrito
Brothers.
Leuven
Brothers did it. I don't know if it's a traditional tune or whatever, but I mean, they have the talent to do whatever they want. And I think that that's a refreshing thing for them, and they seem like they're having fun doing it, but at the same time, it's a rewarding good time for the listener, too.
It's now time for the portion of the show where we invite you to get involved. We're going to ask you to tell us your honest stories about music and its place in your life. We'll ask a different question every week. My guests and I will start it off and then invite you to join our discussion online. This week's question, who was the musician or band who first made you aware of social or political issues? Dave, you first.
Born in 75, child of the 80s. Did not grow up in a household that was heavily dogmatic as far as religion or politics. So, you know, there was ABBA records and Elton John records under the counter, you know, not Bob Dylan. So for me, I had a hard time with this. And I think the first exposure to a message in music or politics in music was the USA for Africa project.
Oh, my goodness.
Or Band-Aid, the Band-Aid thing from the UK. And I think that was probably the first time when I realized, you know, sort of pre-Bono's Jesus Christ thing. And I think it was the first time I realized, like, people, artists have something to say politically. And it didn't matter to me whether it was pretentious or not at the time. There was just so many people that I identified with. Are you kidding me? Cindy Lauper coming in right before the chorus with the yeah, 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 yeah. That's a great...
Like, she's so unusual, that Cindy Lauper.
She is, with the hair. So I think that was the first one for me, and then probably the second and more meaningful one was listening, finding out about Billy Bragg through the connection with Wilco, and then reading his book.
Oh,
and
cool,
that's actually
mm-hmm.
drove me back to, you know, research things that he was interested in, and there was more learning in that, where the first time it was just like, oh, these people have opinions.
Right, right.
And they're really rich.
How about you, Tony?
Well, I remember Bob Marley. Like, when I first became acquainted with his music was probably a few years after he died. So it was probably like 83, maybe 84. And hearing Get Up, Stand Up and thinking, you know, real hard about that.
Stand up for your right. Get up.
I was born in 68, which was real politically turbulent year. And Get Up, Stand Up was a huge song. And then going back a little bit, further into his library.
I Shot the Sheriff,
which I first heard Eric Clapton.
There you go,
yeah.
Me too.
You know, those were great songs. And then later on when I was in, you know, college and then, you know, investigating the whole like 60s Vietnam War era period of music, and Neil Young was such a huge, you know, influence on that scene. And, you know, there's always like more than just one. It seems to be an accumulation of of artists that come to mind, but probably it was Marley first.
Yeah, not a bad answer. And mine is another Bob. Yeah, Bob Dylan. But I can explain. I grew up in South Dakota, and I wasn't hip to anything cool, and I didn't hear, you know, great stuff until after I left the house and moved up here. But I remember being in like eighth grade, had a slumber party with a lot of my friends, came over and all that. One of them had older brothers and sisters and came over with Bob Dylan's Desire album. And I heard,
I heard
the song Hurricane.
Yeah,
about the boxer Reuben Hurricane Carter and that whole story. So that was really where I first became aware of injustices and all that sort of thing. And Dylan told a great story there.
She sees a bartender in a pool of blood. Cries out, "My God, they've killed them all!" Here comes the story of the hurricane. The man the authorities came.
And, you know, later, of course, it became The Clash, where I really had an impact on me. But Dylan was the first one where I became aware of politics and injustice in the world and all that sort of thing. Of course, and Bob Dylan's been doing that since he, you know, left Hibbing pretty much the late 50s, early 60s. So,
Hurricane, what a fantastic combination of a great story.
Yeah.
A message, and really amazing music.
Yeah, and that's still a moving song to me today. You know, and that's that got on the radio, and it's, what is it, 8.5 minutes long?
It's long,
like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, real long, and only Dylan could pull off something like that. Well, those are our answers. So who was the musician or band who first made you aware of social or political issues? Tell us your story online. Go to thecurrent.org and look for Music Heads, then follow the links to join the discussion online. In this episode, we discussed the Raconteurs, Consolers of the Lonely, the new album from Destroyer, Trouble in Dreams, and the Black Keys, Attack and Release. Dave Campbell, thanks for joining us for Music Heads.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And Tony Lopez, I hate to say, is leaving the current. Best of luck in all your future endeavors, and it sure has been fun rapping music with you here on Music Heads.
Thanks, Bill. It's always been a great pleasure hanging out with you.
And, we'll miss you. That's a wrap. It's been Music Heads. Thanks for checking it out. Subscribe to the podcast of the show by clicking on Music Heads when you go to thecurrent.org. The program is produced by Steve Seale. I want to thank Josh Kubasta for sitting in. Michael Wells is the podcast production coordinator, and Julia Schrinkler manages the show's online discussion, which we want you to be a part of. Go to thecurrent.org and look for Music Heads, then follow the links to join the discussion online. I'm Bill DeVille. Reconvene in another week for another installment of Music Heads, presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio.